This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We are in the studios of the library. I'm Grace Cavalieri with Jane Clark, who has come from Ireland. She was with us once, and then COVID interrupted her, and here she is again. Jane Clark, say hello in that beautiful accent.
Hello, Grace. It's lovely to be back here again.
Let's hear a poem.
After. Now that her heart is bent over, like larkspur after a storm, she stays in bed past milking time, pulling the quilt tight around her shoulders, until her collie barks her down the stairs to lift the back door latch. She kneels to light the kippings piled on last night's embers. Her bones creak like the bolt on the door of the barn. A cup of oats, 2 cups of water, a pinch of salt, porridge, tea and tablets, a meal for a queen. Every day without him is too long. She's waiting with the tired cows at the gate.
Jane, there's an interesting quality about that poem because the person off stage is as interesting as the poem. Who is the person off stage?
It's my mother.
Yes. And what is going on?
Well, in January 2017, my father died, and he was 87 when he died. And so this poem was, it's about me watching my mother in the year after he died, mm-hmm. when she was feeling his loss very, very much.
But it's in the detail, it's in the objects that you put in her bedroom that make the portrait of a person. And I told you this is my favorite book of yours. I think that this is just your crown jewel. This book is absolutely your voice without effort. It's pure silk. So I would like you to read that poem one more time.
Thank you. After. Now that her heart is bent over, like larkspur after a storm, she stays in bed past milking time, pulling the quilt tight around her shoulders, until her collie barks her down the stairs to lift the back door latch. She kneels to light the kippings piled on last night's embers. Her bones creak like the bolt on the door of the barn. A cup of oats, 2 cups of water, a pinch of salt, porridge, tea and tablets, a meal for a queen. Every day without him is too long. She's waiting with the tired cows at the gate.
Oh my. The porridge. You had me at the porridge. Well, you're in America for how long?
For 10 days.
And what are you doing here?
Well, I came over specifically to read from my new collection, because this collection, A Change in the Air, came out in May of this year. And so I was invited out by Solas Nua, which is an Irish arts organization, to do some readings. And I was also invited to read at Villanova University, where they have an Irish studies department. And then we had a reading in Princeton yesterday. Again, Solas Nua organized that. And there were two other Irish poets out with me. Now they're gone home, Catherine Phil McCarthy and Katie Donovan. And we read at St. John's Church here in Lafayette Square.
You have done all of this?
We've done all of that already.
Oh yes. My. Tell everyone about the sections in this book, because yes. There is historical content here, and you cross back and forth across time to contemporary life, but you bring in the past. So what are the historical elements that you touch?
Yes. I mean, I've never written a book in the sections like this before. This was new for me to distinguish so clearly between the different sections. But so the first section is much more, it's my mother and my grandmother and their lives and my life with them. So that's in the west of Ireland, on farm in the west of Ireland. Then the second section is about lead mining in County Wicklow, which is where I live. And that went on for 200 years in this, it's a really beautiful part of the country. And you could go there and not even realize. So it seemed to me important to me to mark that heritage. That's part of those mountains, the men and the women who work there. And so I met miners, interviewed them, two miners who were still alive, and I also listened to archived recordings of the miners. So that led to one section. And then another section was about the World War One, and I was given a family archive to work with. And it was letters, particularly between a soldier and his sister. And he joined up the first day of the war, and he died that day 4 years later.
There's so much in this book.
Yes.
You're going to touch on each of these,
yes,
thankfully.
Yes.
And to start with, let's hear two poems together and set it up for us.
Yes.
Which section of the book is this for?
So this is the first section of the book. So these are two poems about my mother. And, you know, after my father died, she very quickly developed dementia. And so, what it is her short-term memory is very much gone, but she has a wonderful long-term memory. And so they're very evocative for me because she repeats the stories, of course. So, you know, it those are what I then take and write some poems with and read back to her. So the first one, dressing my mother for her grandson's wedding. A darker shade of blue than her eyes. The dress has slept for years in the wardrobe, next to the clothes she won't let me give away. She raises her arms for me, though she's forgotten why she can't stay by the fire with her collie. A new pair of tights, an old pair of shoes, softened at the toes and heels. She winces at the touch of the hairbrush. No sign of her pearls. I dredge through photos and medicines on top of the chest of drawers, find them coiled around her engagement ring. She chooses a scarf, red as her lipstick. I tell her there's a beautiful woman in the mirror. She laughs. I might find a new man at the wedding. And then in a whisper, "Sorry, Charlie." As if he's with us in their bedroom, listening.
Hmm. And another from Jane Clark. We're talking about A Change in the Air, which is up for several awards.
All the horses she's ever loved gather round my mother's bed. Bess from Abergavenny would leap any fence for the company of cows. Fred would let himself out of the stable and lift his head collar off the peg. Rory stomped into the kitchen one evening and devoured a loaf of oven-warm bread. Only yesterday, she and her sisters were in the trap on the way to school with the pony that yearned to race the train. He galloped the long bog road from Ballymoe, and not even her father holding the reins could slow him. Now, Sunday morning, she's with her brother in the haggard, pitching hay from a rick. Before the church bell rings in the village, the cattle must be fed. They build the load, tie it with ropes, and heel up the shafts to back in the Clydesdale by the bridle. At first, she frets about steering Jack as he pulls the cart, swaying up the narrow lane and through the gateway. But horses have more gumption than any of us, she says. She loosens the reins, gives him his head.
Jane Clark is the author of three other poetry collections. Blood Axe Books is the publisher. The books are The River, When the Tree Falls, and this most recent, A Change in the Air. She is currently shortlisted for the Forward Prize, and I believe that you have won many awards since then. The Farmgate Cafe National Poetry Award in 2020, the Royal Society of Literature's Odache Prize 2020. You've had a good year in 2020.
I did, yes.
And now there are some others that we're not allowed to even say, but may be very good fortune in the coming week. She grew up on a farm in County Roscommon and now lives with her wife in the uplands of County Wicklow. What was it like growing up for you in Ireland? What was that like? Did you grow up on a farm?
Yes, I grew up on a farm. My father is a farmer, and the farm has been in the family over 300 years. And my mother also grew up on a farm. So
is this Western Ireland?
This is in the West.
Western Ireland sounds scary with cliffs and winds and oceans. It sounds pretty scary.
Yeah, no, we're not right on the coast. We're sort of between the Midlands, and so it would be, you could call it the West Midlands where we are. So our, what Roscommon, the landscape is much more bog landscape, and also lakes and rivers and small fields.
Oh.
Very, very beautiful, yeah.
And what does a farm do?
Well,
the
farm that I grew up on was what would you'd call a mixed farm. So, there were a few cows, and there were a few sheep, and there were a few cattle, and there were hens, and they had their own vegetable garden.
But was it an adornment on their life? It wasn't sustenance.
It was work.
But was it to sustain you?
Well, they would have sold the cattle for meat. That's it. And sold the sheep for meat,
So a working farm.
Yeah, a working farm. Oh, definitely. That was how they made.
And I know you have a poem that you milked cows.
Yes, yes. I mean, I milked cows. I learned how to milk. But my mother, definitely, milked the cows a lot, because I had four brothers. So I tended to be in the house helping my mother, and they were out on the farm. So they laughed when I wrote so much about the farm, because they said, you were reading more books than working on the farm.
And you're just taking all the credit for it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But would you trade it for anything else?
No, it was a very good upbringing. It was a great upbringing. And I suppose just you're in nature all the time. We didn't even realise, we didn't talk about nature, because it was just everywhere. And so it was only when I started to write, because I didn't start to write until I was 44.
But you and Robert Frost.
Really? Did he write?
Well, he published his first book at 40, I think.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, yeah, so it was, but when I started to write, then I suddenly began to realise how much all of that had influenced me, how that landscape was part of how I express myself.
And a necessary thing,
yes,
for your line.
Yes.
What was your schooling like? A rural school?
Yeah, rural school. We went over the fields. We walked over the fields to the school in the summer. Like, it was only, 10 minutes over the fields to the school. And yeah, a small three-teacher school. That was our primary school, and then went into there was a Convent of Mercy school in Roscommon, which is where I went then for secondary school. And then after that, I was in Trinity in Dublin. I went to college.
Where
in Dublin.
Did you get your love for literature and all of that?
You see, I think I got a love for poetry from my father, because he was always quoting the King James Bible, and it's very lyrical. He was also always quoting Tennyson and Shakespeare and a bit of Yeats. And, because in school they all learnt everything off by heart. So Daddy would just quote these things. He loved Longfellow.
A literary farmer.
Yeah.
He loved the romantics.
Yeah, he loved the romantics. And what he loved is the sound of the words and the sound of the lines.
So there you got it.
Yeah, I think
a little
there.
DNA and a little audio.
Yeah.
Jane Clark, we're happy to have you. Will you read two poems together so we have enough of you?
Okay, well, I'm going to read two poems from the sequence about the miners. And so these miners would have lived just in the valley where I live now. And there's a story that on a Christmas morning, all the miners would walk along the valley to go to church.
What did they mine?
Lead. It was lead mining. Christmas morning. Washed clean as ore in a puddle, the miners hold lanterns high to guide them down the glen. Sore heads crave peace after a night in the shebeen, black eyes and bruises from fistfights at the brothel door. Tumbling down from Camanabulog, the Avonbeg River keeps pace with their homesick stride. Like copper and zinc at the jig table, the men divide at Green Anne Bridge for Latin Mass in St. Columba's, morning prayer at Ballinatone. They belt out carols they learned as children, listen to the story of hope. then kneel to petition for clear lungs, safe shifts, and the price of lead to hold.
Mm. That couldn't have been a healthy occupation.
No, I mean, they all suffered terribly from it. And yet they did love the companionship. There's such loyalty amongst them,
each other.
It's a
comradeship, I know, because of the West Virginia mines.
Yes.
And I did live in West Virginia, and I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. And they were proud of the work they did. But it was dangerous work. And, the second poem I'm going to read here from that sequence is, I met a miner who was in his 80s at the time, and I was asking about what it was like going in under the mines. And he said he was lucky enough to work with the pit ponies, so the ponies. And he loved that. And that's what started the poem, because his eyes lit up when he talked about the ponies. And that miner died within 2 months of me finishing the poem. And but his widow came to the launch of the book and I read this poem for her.
And will you tell us what pit ponies are?
Okay, so pit ponies are the small ponies that are carefully selected. They lead the trolley into the mines. So, so they'd lead the trolley into the mines. The trolley gets filled with the lead and stone and all that has to be sorted out. And then they'd lead it back out along tracks, railway tracks.
But you'd think that would be mechanically done.
Oh, well, you see, this was back in the 50s.
Okay,
even in the 50s, it wasn't mechanised. Isn't it interesting?
I'd love to hear it.
Okay. Pit ponies of Glendassen. Hitch to an 8-hour shift. In britchens, hames and traces, they follow the miners' carbide lights, halt under hoppers, turn on a threepence and lean into their collars to pull the 5-wagon train. Low-set cobs from the curra, a piebald and 2 greys. Their hooves fall heavy as hammers on granite. They haul lengths of larch for pit props, pneumatic drills, boxes of gelignite, and, from time to time, deliver injured men back to daylight. The miners pat their necks in passing and feed them windfall apples. Comrades in toil, and first to halt, legs locked at a sudden rumbling, a change in the air, or the rush of running water.
Your heart is in that poem. Your heart is in that poem. There is a poem in here that is fascinating. And you say it has been put to music. It's all, you could say it begins. And it is on 2 pages. And it is just simply names of places. So first of all, why do you connect all those places? What does this mean?
Well, the poem is about the border between Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. So that border was created in 1921. So in 2021, I was commissioned to, it's a marking of the centenary of the border. So I met women, women's groups on both sides of the border. I interviewed them and asked them about their experience. And what they talked about is the actual landscape that the border runs through. And that's what led me to write this poem.
The words are symphony enough. And so would you just read the first page and maybe the last stanza of the second, just so we can hear the symphony of sounds. Jane Clark.
You could say it begins where a rill meets Loch Foyle between Donegal and Derry. Then wends upstream to Liberty Bridge, leans southwest, bends northeast, skirts low hills and rambles across the Skeog Valley to Bridgend. Rises to the summit of Hollywell Hill, down Liberty Burn to Kildrum and Killay, strolls over to Drumnashear, dips into the Foyle as far as the bridge between the Twins, Lifford and Strabane. Hems the Finn southwest, close to Claddy Bridge, turns south to Fern Hill and ambles west along windswept uplands, rolls into the Mourne Beg, until Sturragave Bridge, south with the Shruan Garve, Glendurgan, Legani, through forests to Carrymouth, where the Derg flows into Loch Derg, veers upstream along the Owenboy Burn, runs through hillsides yellow with firs, down to the Termon through Petticoat Town and into Loch Earn with mayfly and trout, west along the Waterford to Loch Awaddy, Loch Rushen and Loch Virty, slips south to Keenahan Loch, westward again to the River Earn, onwards to Bradog Bridge, west of Beleek, uphill with one stream, downhill with the next, to Abernaleha Bridge, southeast to where the County River drops into Loch Melvin and along the valley, winds through lowlands to the Flurry Bridge, and onwards with the Flurry, round the foothills and shins up the summit of Claremont Mountain, falls to the County Bridge and through the mouth of the River Newry into the sea at Carlingford Loch, where you could say it ends, or maybe it begins.
And that is only half of the poem. If you followed your words, would it be actually a map?
It is a map, yeah.
Physically, you follow these places, and it goes from North Ireland through South Ireland, the whole of Ireland?
It goes through between the north and the south of Ireland. It is that border,
but so
along
symbolic,
six counties.
So symbolic.
Yes.
And I think this was on the air, wasn't it?
Yes, we made it. A musician from Belfast set it to music. And then we performed it. It wasn't made into a radio program. It's the one, the Miners' ones were made into a radio program.
Yeah, tell me about The Miners' Way, which was a feature for Radio 4.
Yes.
And it was the best program of the week. It was chosen the best. What is that?
Yes. Well, the Miners, I read two of the Miners' poems already, and then I had written another three. And altogether, we made a documentary, a half-hour documentary, about the Miners' Way, which is a walk that links the three valleys in Wicklow and links the mining sites along these valleys.
And did you have a narration between the poems?
Yeah, so we met the miner, one of the elderly miners who's in his late 80s now, and we met farmers along the way, and we met an ecologist to tell us, and so we talked to various people to give everybody who was listening a sense of this landscape and the mining remains through
the landscape.
What
is the industry now that there are no mines?
Farming... forestry, tourism, but it did have a big effect when the mines shut.
Yes, they always do.
Yeah,
they always do.
Yes.
Jane Clark is here with a rich book, and if you get A Change in the Air, which is available now, you will get to read even more about what we're talking about. And now we'll go on for another poem.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd read At Perching Harbour. So this is a poem about environmental restoration, because one of the themes in the book is biodiversity loss, but also how if you give nature a chance at all, it comes back. So this is an example of this. At Perching Harbour, basking sharks, docile as seal pups, harpooned and netted from currocks, were towed one by one to the fishery at the slipway. Fathers and sons sliced off dorsal fins and hacked through blubber to reach oil-filled livers. Sweating in burnhouse heat, they shoveled bleeding flesh into the rendering machine. They couldn't wash the smell from their skin, not if they swam to Inishgalvin at the end of every shift. Year by year, the catch diminished, disappeared. But late last April, old men cheered from the headland and said, "It's as if we've been forgiven." A school of 12 cruised into Keem Bay, moon tail swishing, fins proud as yawl sails above the waves.
They couldn't wash the smell from their skin. Let's have another poem.
Okay. I'll move then to a poem set in our garden in County Wicklow. And the last section is set where myself and my wife live in County Wicklow.
You live there?
We live there.
Do you have a farm?
No, about two-thirds of an acre. And, okay. And we've a garden and
we're
trees.
We're going to hear about that garden.
Yes, we're going to hear about the garden. So just to say, my parents helped us make the garden. So that's what the poem is about. But when I came out to my parents and told them that I loved a woman, that was very difficult for them. And it was their response was difficult for me. And this poem is about acceptance and love. Spalls. And spalls are the little stones you put in a dry stone wall to keep it together. Spalls. To help us grow a garden, my mother and father travelled across the Bog of Allen and over the Wicklow Gap. They'd have preferred to drive west to Galway or Mayo. They'd have preferred a husband and children, but their daughter loved a woman. We'd have the table set for breakfast, rashers, black pudding, fried bread and eggs. When the soil had warmed, we unloaded shovels and rakes, buckets of compost, and the rusted iron bar for prizing out rocks. The back seat was thronged with pots of seedlings my mother had nurtured all winter. We worked to her bidding. Loosen tangled roots before planting. Sow marigolds next to beans. Sprinkle Epsom salts around roses. My father took off on his own to spud ragwort or clip a hedge. One day, he spent hours gathering stones of different shapes and sizes. By evening, he'd built us a wall under the holly, held together by gravity and friction, hearted with handfuls of spalls.
What a poem of reconciliation. What an extended metaphor every line of that poem is. Jane Clark, A Change in the Air. Let's hear a final poem.
Okay, so I'll give you the last poem from the collection, and it is a love poem. And my wife's birthday is in June. June. Because wild rose fills the garden to the sultry scented brim, and hawk moths flock to fuchsia, humming a wordless hymn. Because pipistrels flicker past, heartbeats on the wing, and tonight's the eve of your birthday, the air warm as your skin. Because it's bright till almost midnight, and the days will be short too soon, let's stay out here and listen for the wood pigeon's five-note tune.
The voice of Jane Clark that softens all the earth in the world. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Maryland State Arts Council, the Sinipet Fund, Bravada Foundation, Natalie Canivore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.